It's another two interview segment on 101.5 FM. Today we'll look at two women within media, Yulia Kovalenko, a civic journalist at U Multicultural, and Danielle Sterk, a filmmaker based in Winnipeg. Let's get into it.
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Yulia. Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
You're one of our civic journalists. What exactly do you do?
First, I was hired as Ukrainian-speaking journalist, and it was very exciting for me, but nervous at the same time because I realized how many responsibility I have to the Ukrainian community and to the U Multicultural organization because I'm representative of their organization. But the longer I live in Winnipeg in Canada, I feel that I'm not interested only in events that happening in Ukrainian community, but also local issues and events. So now I bring people from different communities and nationalities to the studio, and we discuss the topics that are important to our cities, and we talk about how we can make life in Winnipeg better for all communities and healthier.
I just have to say, I'm really impressed with like your intros and like how you edit the videos. You have a great eye for composition and editing, and it's always so fun when uploading the videos, seeing your interactions with the camera and talking about the events. I just think it's so cool.
Oh, thanks.
How'd you get into journalism in the first place? Did you go to school for it?
Yeah, I'm a third year student at Kyiv National University of Culture and Art, and I'm getting my bachelor degree in journalism. So I can't say that I always wanted to be a reporter and make news. I just always loved producing the video content. First, it started at the age of 12 when me and my friends started a YouTube channel.
Classic.
And yes, and once I sat down in the camera, I just loved that feeling to be on the camera and talk to people. And every time I wanted to improve my content, make it high quality, and that's how I'm involved.
Yeah, always improving in the craft, trying to figure out better ways to tell stories, interacting with the community. It's always a lot of fun. And just the whole YouTube thing, it's such a classic, like, yep, I really wanted to do this, start a YouTube channel. Now I'm sort of working in the media field. So that's really cool and exciting.
Yeah, I always see how many mistakes I made. And there are a lot of competitors on YouTube. There are a lot of different bloggers. So you have to be, you have to produce really high quality and engaging content if you want to stay on
and
the leading edge.
And the right trends and everything.
So that's why I always try to improve my content.
Third year in Kyiv University. Kyiv? How do you even say it properly?
Kyiv.
Okay, I'm just butchering it over and over again. But anyways, you're going to university, so it's all online currently, right?
Yes, now I do have online classes, but to be honest, I miss all my classes because of the difference of the time. Yeah. I love sleeping.
I mean, it makes it also hard to do online classes, like with COVID and everything, and opportunities provided from U Multicultural. I was able to take some courses, and it's just completely different than being in the classroom.
Yeah, and I just lose connection with my classmates and with my teachers. But they are supporting me, that they see my results and that I'm in Canada. They see all my video. They follow me on social media and like, wow, Yulia, you're doing a great job.
So what brought you to Canada?
Yeah, when the war started, I moved to Poland after 5 days living in the basement. When Canada launched a special program for Ukrainians, I applied right away because I didn't speak Polish and I couldn't find any job in Poland. And I just was crying all the time. Yeah, it's not going to work out. And I just decided to move. It was a good way to start to build new life from scratch.
I guess just what are your like feelings and thoughts as you're seeing the news come out?
Of course, it's very hard. And I think people in Ukraine, they get used to sirens and they don't even go to the bomb shelters. But I remember the Ukraine the way when I left Ukraine. So I still remember the empty streets and only tanks.
All the tanks kind of drive
around. Yes, yeah, drives around. And I still remember the sounds of the sirens. And when I read the news, it's always hard for me to concentrate on my work. But at the same time, my work, and editing, it's kind of meditation for me. Mm-hmm. I just can abstract of all the things.
Abstract gives you a moment to kind of just not think about what's going on in the world and just like, all right, let me just get in the work. A little bit of a meditative, zen moment at times. Yeah, it's unfortunate that when the news came out, it's like, oh God, what? Like, what's to gain from this except just blood and loss of life?
Nobody knows the answer. Nobody knows. I know that people and the city, some cities coming back to the daily life, like restaurants opening, people start to work, but I think nobody can be 100% safe when rockets flying in the sky.
You always have something in the back of your mind. I think that just kind
of
proves human resiliency, that even in the most intense situations, we can, maybe that's also bad, but we can normalize the situation at times when things are just completely chaotic and falling apart. We're like, yeah, you know what? I'll just go to work, do my thing. Love and just words of everything to the Ukrainian people, that they're able to retain their lands and, you know, find some hope at the end of this.
For sure, Ukraine will win.
Yes.
100%.
You come here and you start working with You Multicultural to tell Ukrainian stories at first. And, you know, there was that responsibility as you're a representative of both communities at time. Why do you think it's important to tell? I mean, it's probably an obvious answer, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Why do you think it's important to highlight the stories of the Ukrainian diaspora here in Canada and Winnipeg?
I think everyone knows that Ukrainian community is very strong and powerful community, and we do our best to preserve our culture and identity. So I think media is one of the most important factors that can help to implement this. So it's really, I just feel that it is connected people, because like old immigrants, they have an outdated vision of Ukrainian culture, and newcomers, they have this new vision. They bring some piece from Ukraine modern culture, and I think my goal is to connect all this and to bring different opinions and different people to my perspective and connect them. It's really unique because Winnipeg never had before Ukrainian speaking journalist, and a lot of people didn't understand who I am and what I'm doing, but now...
Like, what's going on here? Who's this?
Yes, but now I feel that like I have to produce high quality content and interesting to all ages, to our community.
Yeah, and I mean, it's continuing to expand. We have another person from the community that's starting to produce content right now.
Yeah, Ksenia Khudintsev.
So, I mean, we just have one episode go out now. She seems to be a natural.
She's an actress.
Interesting.
Yes.
So she went to like acting school and stuff like that, or took an acting program?
Yes, in Ukraine.
Oh, cool. So, I mean, she probably came over kind of around the same time as you.
Yeah, that's why. Yes. That's why she has experience and very confident in front of the camera. And she loved doing it. Like, she enjoyed it, and I love spending time with her and working with her and bringing more people, bringing more guests. It's always a lot of fun.
Well, it's a perfect opportunity right now to highlight this content because, you know, we have Ukrainians coming over now, the community is growing, so now they need a voice.
Of course. Yeah, I think every community needs a voice, and that's perfect that You Multicultural has opportunity to bring different cultures, to bring different opinions, and grow.
Let's say 10 years down the line, where do you see yourself?
Oh.
I know, that's the challenging question that ever, what am I, your school counselor or something? Where do you see yourself after graduation?
Of course, I have a lot of goals and dreams, but I just hope to continue to do what I love to do, what I'm enjoying, and make positive impact on people's life. So that's my goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad dream and a goal to have, telling the stories of others, helping other people out. In terms of content, have you ever thought about like kind of expanding beyond like maybe down the line, oh, maybe a documentary would be kind of up your alley, or is that still kind of a little intimidating?
Oh, it's intimidating. I just love interviewing people and talk to people. I need a big production to do a documentary.
Yeah, it can take a lot of work from what I've been hearing and trying to do some other stuff on the side. You're like, oh no, what sort of monster have I tried to unleash here?
Yeah, of course, because even when I started Make Reporters, mm-hmm. it was so difficult for me to gather all information, to start to make connection with people. So I need more experience before starting making documentary.
Yeah, just got to take some more time, build up those skills, that sort of thing. So when you came to Canada, for every new immigrant, it's a different experience. But what sort of culture shocks or things did you find when you came over here?
Everything.
Everything, yeah.
Everything for me was a cultural shock and everything was new for me. Mm-hmm. So, but I think what helped me to adjust to a new society first is my work, because I really loved what I'm doing. And the second is my curiosity to learn something new, to get new experience and willing to meet new people and learn from them. So, of course, I faced a lot of challenges, but I just tried to find something positive in every situation. Mm-hmm. And I would never have had the opportunity to get this experience living in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So I just try to stay positive.
Stay positive. Well, I guess just what, is there any one specific thing that you're like, wow, this was just, I never expected this at all?
Everything.
Or is there just way too much to kind of narrow it down?
Yeah, way too much, yeah. I will write a post on my social media about that. I will write a book about that.
Write a book about it. What did you know about Canada before coming over?
Nothing. No.
We're just this country up in the top of North America.
Yeah, I was just always wanted to live in America and Canada, like all girls. I was watching YouTube a lot, and I just followed all girls who moved to Canada and how they are building their life. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me unrealistic, and I can't do that.
Okay.
It's like too hard.
Too hard.
Too hard, too far.
Interesting.
Too expensive.
I guess just what was your experience going through your first winter in Canada? I know it's something that, this year has been even crazier because this is, I can't remember the exact date. It's like 18 something. Like it's been almost like 200 years since the last time we've had below zero temperatures throughout all of March. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I first moved to Canada and my my friends and my Canadian family started to tell me all the jokes about how cold there is in Canada and like about all the stories about 2 meters of snow, and I was like, it's like
you're pulling my leg, that's not real.
Yes, but when the winter actually comes, it's not fun anymore for me. And
no, it is pretty cold, and for everyone who's like lived there whole lives, like myself, it is still miserable. Mm-hmm. Like every winter is another like, oh, here it comes again, which part of the challenge of adjusting, trying to figure out, okay, winter activities and things. But even when you have activities, you're going out skiing, snowboarding, all that, it still sucks when it's like minus 30 outside.
I agree, yeah. I thought I would die in this winter. I don't know. Probably is the worst thing about Canada. It's the worst experience I ever had in life. Actually, I think if I'm still alive after winter, I'm ready now for everything in life.
Yeah,
I can.
World. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it is kind of a trial by fire sort of thing moving to Canada. And I mean, Manitoba is probably one of the, like the prairie provinces are the places that get the coldest. Like if you would have gone on the coast, maybe minus 20 was the worst you get. But I mean, then you also have to deal with it always being wet and rainy all the time. At least in the prairie provinces, we have a variety of things. Mm-hmm. You know, we have blizzards, we have scorching heat, we have crazy rain. You know, sometimes we have some nice weather too.
Sometimes 1 month a year.
Sometimes. I guess just how are you liking Winnipeg? Because I know sometimes, you know, people can have a negative idea of what Winnipeg is. And yes, it has some shortcomings, but I believe there is some beauty in here. What are your just thoughts and experiences on Winnipeg so far?
It's good that I have so many new experiences here, and I met so many great people who helped me to adjust to a new society. And every day there is something new for me. Every day I get new experience, and even if it's hard experience, I just still learning. So
you're still learning. Still learning. Well, I guess just some of the things for anyone listening who's new. Winnipeg and just Manitoba in general has some beautiful nature out there, like going out. My favorite thing is to go for like hikes in the woods and forests, going out to the lakes and everything. Beautiful out there. Winter, there's a lot of activities. Skating on the river is always a highlight. Festival de Voyageurs, as well as before winter, Nuit Blanche is always a fantastic time. Illuminate the night. Tons of the art scene is amazing here in Winnipeg. You just got to know where to find it. Amazing musicians. We have tons of diverse like ethnic foods and things like that here. So there's a lot. And what else? What else? Great drag scene as well. If people enjoy drag shows, that sort of thing, there's a ton of really great shows and stuff. What's it called? Oh no. Forgot the name, but just Google drag shows in Winnipeg and you'll be able to find a ton of performers, a ton of places. Yeah, Winnipeg's one of those, I feel, a gem in the rough. There's a lot of hardships that go on here. We're struggling right now just in terms of our governments. But there's great community here. And, you know, with the right love and dedication from the community, Winnipeg can really be something special.
Highly recommend everyone to try this winter.
And try it out. If you survive winter, you can survive anything.
Yes. It makes you stronger.
So I guess for any newcomers coming in, do you have any advice for them if they're coming and settling here in Winnipeg?
Just be open-minded for everything new and be ready to struggle. But
I guess find a community or find
a community, find people who support you. Find something that you enjoy to do and try to find something positive in every day and keep going, never give up.
fire in me.
I'm a filmmaker. My first career was as a dancer choreographer. So I left Winnipeg when I was 18 after training with the Royal Winnipeg Ballet. Went to Vancouver for a few years and Montreal for other. But I was away for about a decade. When I came back, I did a degree at U of W in film. And since 2004, I've been working as a filmmaker full time, independently on documentaries. Recently, the last few years, dramatic series, as well as some experimental films.
Why sexual violence and teenagers? Powerful stuff. For anyone who isn't aware of like the statistics and everything, it is just mind-blowing, those numbers.
Yeah, they are mind-blowing, and it's a little surprising that we aren't more aware of them or that we aren't made more aware of them. You know, the proportions are actually epidemic, and yet, you know, we just came out of the COVID epidemic, and the amount of resources, public awareness, prevention to strategies, all that occurred. I mean, just imagine if that was put towards preventing violence against women specifically, because they are the largest group that are targeted, although boys and men are also targeted. But the groups that that are 89% of sexual assault victims are in Canada are female, of declared, that represents 5%, they think, of actual sexual assault.
It's the same thing with like scams and everything. Like there's these massive amounts of like scams that take place and only just a fraction of them are reported. So it's like, what is actually out there?
Yeah, and because sexual violence is a type of violence, I mean, if I was walking down the street and I got slugged in the face, you can believe I'm going to the emergency and I'm reporting an assault. When that kind of thing happens to a body part that is sexual and it's of a sexual nature, we don't do that. There's a lot of shame associated with sexual assault. The victim feels, and we've done a fabulous job in our society to blame the victim. And the immediate conversation that a person has in their mind is, how could I have avoided that? What could I have done differently? Nothing. That individual made a choice. That individual is fully responsible. But unfortunately, there's so much stigma attached to it. We do not have a very positive result when we go to police or to organizations that support us, legal system, etc. So we've seen that it's not a great thing to go in. It's risky to go in to actually denounce our sexual assault. So that's problematic as well. We've got to do a better job.
When we're looking at the statistics, perpetrators are someone the victim is familiar with. Mm-hmm. So that adds to that embarrassment, that
Absolutely.
Fear.
That complexity. Yeah, the old, you know, the thing we see on TV where someone jumps out of a bush, like that's a minority of situations. So yes, in the declared sexual assault complaints, yeah, 87% of the assaulters are people that they know, that the victim knows. So that could be someone from school, it could be a teacher, it could be a coach, it could be an uncle, it could be someone's dad, it could be a friend, it could be your buddy's buddy. That's how that happens. And it happens through access. And the 98% of sexual assault perpetrators are of the male gender. So this film, for me, I put men in the forefront to speak about it. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in a minute. But my message really is that we have, as a society, identified sexual violence, even in the sentence, sexual violence against women. This is not the right sentence. It's sexual violence perpetrated by males. I mean, 98%. So it's a male problem. People have got to get, you know, I was listening to, Hannah Gatsby, I think, okay. This comic from New Zealand who's phenomenal. She basically said, get your shit together. and it is that. It is that. Women can't cross their legs any tighter. They can't mm-hmm. change how they walk, talk, move, or places they go. They can't limit any more where they do and where they go and what they do. Men have got to start talking about what it is to be a man. What are the pressures around those stereotypes? Sexism exists on both sides, of course. Mm-hmm. And men, as you're a man, you might have lots to talk about, contribute to this conversation as well. And I certainly was super interested in hearing about it from young men. Mm-hmm. But that experience is a box. It's a tight box. And when you step out of that box, you also pay a price. And that is one of the things that I learned through this documentary that stops people, men and women, but certainly young men. I mean, teen boys, teen girls. I mean, all we're trying to do is fit in mm-hmm. to our peer groups. So to expect a young person to step out and say, hey, that's not cool, or watch what you're doing, or don't do that, or intervene, is a lot to ask. I'm still asking it. I think we still have to ask it. But I think as adults, we need to equip young people with the tools to be able to step in like that and be brave people and to take care of each other and to not allow and not be bystanders when we witness this type of behavior.
Before we get any deeper into this conversation, I'd just like to talk a little bit about the visuals mm-hmm. of the film, like the different approaches that you had with the women and female stories, the way you had that portrayed versus the males and men talking about things. Why did you decide to have those different approaches in the visuals style? Because they were very distinctive from each other.
Yeah, I chose to represent. I mean, first thing I'd like to say is I'm sad that this is a gendered violence in the sense that mm-hmm. In our world today where gender is more fluid and we like to be far more open around it, it kind of sucks to be able to have to talk about this thing so gendered, so male-female. I'd like to say that all the statistics that I used are from Statistics Canada and other sources in Canada mm-hmm. only, and they are based solely on people identifying as female or male. So that's when I say those genders, that's mm-hmm. that's what I mean, and that's why I have to talk in those terms. Your question again was great, was the two visual approaches. Distinctly, the experience of being male and female in our world, I think they're very different. And we heard from the male participants how free they felt. They went anywhere they wanted to, day or night. I treated that with a full screen, so the men are fully visual. We see them speaking. We see them in different locations and space, in their private places, at home, as well as in public places. And they talk about feeling very comfortable in all of those places. And I juxtapose that against, at the top of the show, at the top of the movie anyway, women and how they feel restricted in public spaces, even in private places, you know, walking into a party and realizing, oh, whoops, I only know two people. This is dangerous for me. That's really quite a sad statement to make about our society. So for me, visually, a lot of the women were shot and filmed in black and white. Mm-hmm. There were photographs that were taken, sequences of photographs by the photographer Yaco, Jean-Christophe Yacano. He's in Montreal. And he does this style. It's phenomenal. He just click, 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 clicks, usually vertically, and follows the person around, click, 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 click. And then after, I think it's in Final Cut Pro, he does a sort of morphing, or he does it so it looks a bit...
I was wondering how that effect was taking place, whether it was like kind of like using AI to generate them.
But no.
Just right in program.
Just right in the program. And I mean, he's able to manipulate, you know, how long a morph you want to have happen. So some things looked more slow motion, kind of dissolve-y. Other things were very staccato and abrupt, looking like animated movement, but not quite cohesive. And that was meant on purpose as well, to show the experience that one might have when you're one with yourself and nature and you're walking down the river and you feel comfortable because you're maybe with a male partner or with a bunch of friends and it's the middle of the day, you're not really paying attention. I think you're feeling like a whole person. When you're walking alone and you're female or a group that's highly targeted for sexual violence, you cannot be in your body. You're completely having this whole other experience. And it also reflects trauma, sexual assault trauma, where one leaves one's body or gets dissociated in some way to protect oneself psychologically. And so that also, I think, is an experience that we can sense when those young women anonymously, various women talk about different experiences they've had. I think we have a sense. It was to cover who they are. It was to protect their identities as well. But it was also very much an aesthetic chosen to show what it might feel like if we've never experienced it. It might give someone an idea about what that feels like.
One line that really stood out to me was one of the, and I guess we could use the term like AFAB, if that works, like assigned female at birth.
Sure.
Like AFAB. The one AFAB person talking about how this man, I'm not sure if it was an uncle or something, I can't remember, who, like, you know, knew them growing up their whole life, and then they went to the beach the one time, and then started commenting about their body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you knew me this whole time from a child, and now that I've reached this, like, peak age, now I'm just a potential object to look at. And I think that was just such a powerful moment to be like, you're right. A lot of men or just see women or feminine presenting people as objects.
Yeah, and that was very strongly felt, I think, in the when the women were speaking about their experience. By the way, we also had a group, women and male, that were bisexual or not heterosexual at any rate, or homosexual. So there was a nice variety there, as well as some diversity in race. And what wasn't mentioned was actually one of the individuals that male presenting also had been sexually assaulted, but that was not brought into this particular film at this time. But so that's also of importance I'd like to bring up. But yeah, the sense of feeling that someone knows you as a human being, and once you have a female, once you become sexualized, and often, as we know, whether it's Picasso or all the great artists of our era have fixated on young women, mostly under the age of 18, 70% of sexual assault victims in Canada are 18 years and under. Those are teenagers.
Yeah, the grade 9 statistic that was in there, too.
The first time that most people are sexually assaulted is grade 9, for the first time, meaning there are other times. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely astonishing. So our fixation with sexualizing young women, or in school, and there's a situation in the movie as well, in the film, where a young man says how uncomfortable he was about a school principal calling out what a young woman was wearing. Whereas he wore something on pajama day that was completely revealing and it was just funny. Whereas he shamed her in front of a lot of people with an authoritative, you know, patriarchal tone. And he felt really bad about that. Just witnessing it, he felt terrible. And I'm sure many other people did there. But that kind of behavior is pretty consistent. I'm a mother of four daughters. My youngest is in grade 12. I've been experiencing this for years, witnessing how they are treated in that way that is objectified. And not with respect, really, with no respect. And the one thing that really touched me throughout this whole film was hearing some of the men saying how to be a man, it meant to have, and he went a gesture around his face, meaning no expression, and to be separate from your emotions.
This stoicism that is expected, sort of.
Yes, and imagine teaching, I'm sure you can, teaching young boys that they shouldn't have emotions, to shut them off. That to me was a direct correlation to what you just said about treating women as objects. That young woman said, that man who knew me my whole life suddenly saw me as a sexual object. He no longer saw the human in me. He disassociated right there. He did the same thing we've been teaching boys to do their whole lives, if we are teaching them in this old way of conventional, boys can't have feelings, yada, yada. I laugh at it now. I think it's ridiculous. But people are still being brought up like that. People are still being told, and they're being shamed for having emotions. They're being shamed, young men, for listening, for being a support person instead of a leader, all of those qualities that we, we've said are non-masculine.
Yeah, there's this whole aspect of society that kind of wants men to just fit within this mold to continue to perpetuate the system of power. And I noticed it growing up because I'm queer and I've been queer for a long time. I didn't have the words for it beforehand, but I mean, now I do. But those times when I was younger, loved to skip around, like to do more feminine things, and everyone being like, ooh, don't do that. That's weird. And you're shamed for stepping out of the box. And I think one of the men in the film also discussed that sort of thing. If you step out of the mold, you're an outsider, you're an other. And these constant mindsets, like guys talking around in the locker room, like, oh, did you see this person? Yeah, look how nice and grown up she looks now, sort of thing. And it's all those things. And yes, I was part of those negative mindsets, because you grow up and you don't question them. You don't think about them. You're just like, okay, I guess that's just how things are, until eventually you're like, wow, this is weird. This is kind of messed up. And I think the biggest moment for me is when I started trying to date guys, going on Tinder and everything, and then feeling this overly aggressive approach to like being like, hey, let's hook up, sort of thing. And I'm a big guy, right? And it still felt weird. And it's like, now for someone who's much smaller than me, like, what sort of fear must they have in a society that kind of encourages men to be aggressive in that way and doesn't help them socialize or understand their feelings in a healthy environment?
Yeah, and I think you're touching on something important. There's the one part that I think is the socialization of young boys and young girls, girls to please, to not speak out, to be silent. But really, we've been taught to be pleasing. I mean, I'll say the bad words, but resting bitch face, I mean, means, why aren't you smiling at me?
Oh, that's the creepiest thing
to hear. It is the creepiest thing.
Smile. You look prettier that way. And it's like, ugh.
I'm here to please you? Like, this is why I exist on earth, is to please you? And I think misogyny is about that. And I think our patriarchal society has been built all around that. Women are supporting men. They're there for them. The world is built around men. And we're there to kind of fill in the gaps and do the dirty work and not be paid for it, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's very generalization, but general misogyny and patriarchal society. But, and that's news to no one, I'm sure. But how that plays out in human relationships of sexual nature, I mean, we're not even talking about sexuality. Like, we're not even, I mean, you started talking about it a little bit, but like, healthy sexuality is a whole other picture. No one in this film talked about sexuality, actually, about how do you approach somebody? How do you tell someone you love them? Or how do you go out with someone? Can I hold your hand? No one talked about that. One person said they were 18 years old who was sexually assaulted by their boyfriend violently and said, I didn't even know what consent was at 18. To me, there's no excuse in our society in Winnipeg and Canada to not know what consent is. We're doing a bad job in our education system. We need to start changing that. How is it to be a smaller person, you mentioned, in this world? It's very scary. The precautions, like, I was just overwhelmed. Like, if they have panic buttons, they have, they park in certain areas, they choose to not go out in certain areas. I mean,
can't go out at night to the park or something like that alone.
Like, you know, it's time for the world to change, not for women to keep fitting into mm-hmm. this how can I be safe mold. That mm-hmm. does not, that's not a healthy way. And the other thing I'd like to say is, you know, with this cyber violence as well, targeting like our governor general and other women in positions of power, we're breaking them down through this hatred, online hatred mm-hmm. and violence and threats. I mean, we are asking women to step away again and go away, step off the track, mm-hmm. hide yourselves. It's a fearful place. That tone, growing up in all of that, has an impact. Even if you haven't been physically, mm-hmm. sexually assaulted or been experienced that personally, that's the environment that we're growing up in. You don't have a place here. And if you do step in, you're going to be really, really punished. Mm-hmm. You're at risk. And so how can we change that? Like, we just talked about the boys saying, how do I, as a young, I'm 13 or 14 or 15 or 16, and I'm with my peers, and I want to fit in, and I know I'll pay the price, because there's one bully person, right? Mm-hmm. There's just one, usually. Everyone else is probably pretty decent, but everyone's laughing, and everyone's going to partake, and no one's going to stop them and say, that's not cool. And a couple of people who are feeling uncomfortable will partake in it in order to be more accepted.
To fit in, yeah.
To fit in. So we're contributing by doing that. It's understandable. I'm not judging it. I understand it. These are young people. But we have to start talking about that dynamic, and we have to start breaking that down as
and
a society.
Putting systems in place, because right now, just in terms of like the online left and right now, online left is having those conversations around what does healthy and positive masculinity look like. Because when we're looking at the spokespeople of masculinity online right now, you've got your Jordan Petersons talking about things. You have your Andrew Tates. Sneakos, all these kind of individuals in the online sphere, they're telling people, oh, you have to be a man this way, and that's mm-hmm. the only way. And it's just completely filled with vile, misogynistic takes and beliefs. And like with Andrew Tate, got arrested for sex trafficking, and then all his a big portion of his followers are like, nah, they either don't believe it or they think it's cool.
Yeah, it's awful.
And my mentality is, at least for the online left, it takes men and others like me to try and build more positive ideas of what masculinity
yes.
can be. Yes, you can be tough and strong.
Sure.
That's fine.
Yep.
It's really fun to get strong and buff and things. But at the same time, you don't have to be toxic about it and being aggressive or aggro.
No, and you know, I have stats from the States. I don't have them now, but having read them, I read an incredible book called Boys and Sex mm-hmm. by a sociologist in the States, and she interviewed young men, 17 to 21-ish, about the same age group that I was dealing with here, college, and you know, there's college culture that's very different in the States. It's really strong and mm-hmm. really cuckoo, I think, but she talked to these young men, and basically what she found out was that, and she'd been following women her whole life, and she said, oh, I'm going to figure out what's going on the other side of this coin here. And she was astounded to know that these men, most young men, had this, she thought, who's going to talk to a middle-aged mother? Like, who's going to talk about sex to me? Well, guess what? They were starving to talk about it because they had no one to talk to. They could not talk to their male counterparts, their dads, their uncles, their brothers, their friends. Mm-hmm. If they had a significant other in a heterosexual couple that was female, then they could speak with her, and she was like the only source of emotional and like growth, basically, mm-hmm. Which is way too much to be asking one individual. But you talked about creating positive spaces for positive male expression of self that's just out of the box, that can just be varied. Mm-hmm. The stats in the States is that more and more men are killing themselves. The mm-hmm. suicide rate is getting higher and higher. And I mean, I just learned this, I'm sure you know it from a million times ago, but the Dorito shape for guys, like now young boys are buffing up as teenagers and stopping eating and what have you, because they think they have to have this Dorito shape of wide yeah. shoulders and tiny waist.
Unhealthy body expectation
Absolutely.
For men. Like this whole idea of like, oh, if you want to attract women and like be this alpha guy, like, oh, you have to have these 6-pack abs. And it's like, no, you don't have to do that.
No.
Like in terms of exercise, which I believe exercise is a great outlet for getting out frustrations, getting energy. It's healthy for you, but it shouldn't be about having this idealistic
body image.
Body image. Yeah. It should be about that kind of process. It can be a sense of meditation.
Yeah.
Something I should probably do more of, but
yeah, and you referred back to those male groups. So I think men, if I'm just observing, and I'm no specialist, but are struggling to find ways to re-identify now socially. Mm-hmm. You know, the type of jobs that men as provider and protector are no longer
the
identity.
Right?
And so what are we now? Oh, what are we as guys? What are we? What should we be? Well, COVID's been great for a lot of families where men were at home with their babies, et cetera. And they were like, yeah, guess what? I kind of like this thing and I want to have a connection with my children. And I don't want to go back to this rat race where I'm the only. And I think that's where the balance is going to start to be. I mean, we have Scandinavian countries who have stats of sexual violence against women are minimal. The gender equality is very, very high. Mm-hmm. And they have social programs that almost make it impossible to not have equal parental leave. And they share it up to 5 years old. Like you can share, you're 3 days a week, I'm 3 days a week. Like, mm-hmm. let's do it. Neither one of us steps out of our working world that we might enjoy with other adults and get a lot of benefit from and self-worth, as well as parenting at the same time and being present with our young children and having connection and love with them, which means we're bringing up good people. Mm-hmm. And for us to think that it's only been one gender, or we still expect only one gender to be doing that work, it's ridiculous. There's so many, like, you're a human being. I'm a human mm-hmm. being. Like, why would I have more instincts or more mm-hmm. whatever than you would? I do not.
Exactly.
I do not. We'll give you a child. You'll figure it out. Give me a child. I'll figure it out best we can with our support systems. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some positivity around men and dads being far more involved in this generation than I've seen in the past. That's a really positive, I think, change. And I'm hoping that allows men to redefine themselves as caring humans mm-hmm. and that's a proud thing to be as a male.
I completely agree. And we need to continue to have those conversations and build them up, because I think one of the big things is, like, when we see the stats of men committing suicide, or the amount of close friends that they have has continually gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. And as we're seeing kind of developments in fighting within like feminism spheres, you know, for the guys, sometimes it feels like, well, we're being left off. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. But my mindset is, you know, through feminism, we create equality and betterment of life for all.
Absolutely.
Because when femme-presenting people are happier and safer into society, you know, potentially that provides more opportunities for guys to date, because women aren't afraid.
Yes, yes.
They can have more friends, so mm-hmm. they can socialize and not feel weird
and
around
create
women.
Community. Yeah, exactly. I feel like there is a weird feeling. I'm often in my work in the film industry the only woman in the room, mm-hmm. and I sense there's a kind of awkwardness around the men, and I'm like, oh, it's terrible, you know, maybe they're not comfortable with me being a leader. I don't think it's that, actually. I think there's an awkwardness around being with the opposite gender without it being sexual mm-hmm. and working together and figuring that stuff out and being able to have different ideas and na-na-na-na. And I know that sounds really basic because everyone works with each other, but you said one thing really important that you just brought up as well. If people are just interested in numbers and money, our country will fare way better financially if half of the population is allowed to be fully themselves, and mm-hmm. of course the men as well. Mm-hmm. But if we're telling women they're not, you know, it's terrible to go into engineering, you're going to get massacred by this culture there, you can't, you know, do this,
you're,
you can't,
de-incentivizing it,
you're afraid to be in certain groups because we've heard about those environments are not healthy for women, everything's a friggin' struggle. Like, wow, let's open the door a little bit. Let's just hold open the damn door. Hold open the door, please, and allow women to step into the places that they should be stepping into, to be fully themselves, because that'll contribute to our entire society so much more.
Talking about like contributions and working together, like in stats from the U.S. military, when they have diverse groups of gender, sexuality, and
race.
Like ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
they are much more productive in terms of their tasks than if you have one group.
Mono group, yeah.
Yeah. And like, think about like all in terms of just the women who have contributed to science and haven't been given their like their dues or recognition. Yep. Like if we had an open space and this open mindset of, yeah, if whoever you are, regardless of it, if you are the right person for the job, like how much further would we be in certain fields if we just let people, like the next Einstein could have been a woman, but yes, she was never given the opportunity.
And we think, well, sure, they can all do that now in Canada. Well, not really. Not if when you walk into a space, you're feeling nervous all the time or anxious because you're not feeling safe, or those ha-ha casual jokes, or the way you're being looked at. And when you really have to think about what you're wearing all the time so that you do not attract any kind of sexual comments, that's kind of crappy. So you say, yeah, sure, they can, not you, but we say, oh, women can step into those.
The proverbial you.
Yeah, you know, they can be an Einstein today. What's the problem? Step up. We have to start paying attention to those microaggressions, never mind all the safety issues we've talked about, which are massive around sexual assault. And let me just say, sexual assault is you are handicapping an individual. Mm-hmm. That individual's handicapped. For the rest of their lives, they have to deal with that scar and that issue in all of their relationships, in all the movements that they take, where they go, how they socialize, with whom, where they work, how they work. It's really an important, I think we're cutting off a good right arm of our whole country when we do that to a group of people. And, you know, I went to Europe recently and was blown away by all the architecture in Spain and in Rome. And it just saddened me because there was not an individual that I saw that was a female visual, like an artist. And they were all built by men. All the construction people were men, continuing. Like they're still building the cathedral from a Gaudi. And even there with 3D printing, they're doing 3D printing and stuff like that. That's stuff anybody today can do. Mm-hmm. It's again, only male people. They're all listed there. And it's like, wow, it's just the absence. And that, I'm just talking about white people. Mm-hmm. That's just white people. And so the absence of all the multiple groups that are not included in this monolithic one voice kind of world that we have in the arts and politics, whatever. I just think we're depriving ourselves of so many gifts, like you said. Yeah. There is more Einsteins out there. There are. There have been. Now they're dead. We didn't figure out all their stuff because they weren't able to. Mm-hmm. But please, let's encourage all of the people around us to be advancing.
It's a ton of conversations right now, as we're seeing with wealth inequality, inflation, war, instability around the world. It's all these conversations that are adding up, like feminism that we need to continue to build towards, men's health as well, working towards those things. Like mm-hmm. those two things aren't exclusionary.
They are connected entirely.
And there's just so much things in the climate, impending climate disaster. Like if we can continue to come together for some of these other things, we can build towards these large-scale global issues that we're seeing.
Yes. So what we need to do just today is to, the next time a topic comes up or bring up the topic, ask people, share this film with people and just say, hey, I want you to watch this 30-minute film, 35-minute film. It's a doc. It won't hurt you. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're a victim of sexual assault, it'll be difficult, but it does have a trigger warning at the beginning. Because the content is about that. We're not describing things in great detail or we're not seeing anything mm-hmm. violent, but it's still, the content is there and the impact on these individuals is there. But watch it, share it with people, watch it. Let's talk about it. What came up for you? Like, what is it being mm-hmm. a guy? I've said for years to my partner, who's male, feminism is not going to move anymore forward. It's stopped. It has stopped until men do the work that they can do around reinventing themselves. Mm-hmm. Men need to reinvent themselves. They need to free themselves up. Then we're going to be, now let's have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I really think that's the most encouraging thing. And so for me to see these three young men talk about their experiences as witnesses of sexual assault, also just being a teen and the male dynamic and what it is to be male in our society for these three individuals at this time, I think that's already a great starting point to have conversation amongst men with each other and open it up a little bit. Take the risk. You know, people are paying a big price out there by being female or by being indigenous or by being other groups. So if we're part of the white, straight white male or even homosexual or queer male, like let's look at what that privilege is and let's look at the things we've been all brought up with. We've all been brought up with it. I mean, if I look at my sexuality just as a sidebar, like I was brought up with only women's bodies being seen, naked women's bodies. Mm-hmm. what do you think my sexual imagination's about? And I'm straight as an arrow. Like, and so, you know, it's like, it's just been so one vision. It's just been so geared one way, hetero, white, male. And we just need to bust through all of that. So please have conversation about this. Have conversation about what it is to be male. Have conversation about is how awkward it is. Even if you don't find any solutions, just how tough it is to be around people that are bullies. How tough is it around to be the alpha male guy and not feel competent enough to step in?
Well, all those guys look like miserable at the end of the day. Like there's this whole facade that they're trying to upkeep. And it can't be, well, it's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be happy in that sort of mindset of always in the grind, never allowing yourself to be vulnerable with someone else. And I think that's incredibly sad.
It is. It is very sad. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. So it has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you about this very important topic. Where can people go to watch the film Why Sexual Violence and Teens?
Why Sexual Violence and Teens is available on streaming as of now forever. Just click in on the National Film Board. So nfb.ca is the website. Click in Why. There's more than one film that's Why. But Sexual Violence and Teens is the sort of subtitle so that you can get that. And click on it. It's all Manitobans that are in the film, the music, everything filmed here, participants, post-production, all of it's been done here. So it's a Winnipeg film, and yet it speaks very largely about our society. So please go look, nfb.ca, Why Sexual Violence in Teens, or my name, Danielle Sturk. I've only done two NFB films, so you'll find it that way as well, Sturk, and that's another way to find it.
I'm Ryan Funk with U Multicultural. Thanks for listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM for another episode of U Talk. See you next Tuesday.